WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to the final Monday Night Talk of February 2017. I cannot believe... We've already flown through the month of February. Yes, my name is Kevin Tachi. I will be your host for the next hour and 45 minutes. And I am not alone. We have a gentleman who has been on the program prior. He will be my unofficial co-host for the evening, my wingman, Mr. Bob Hayes. Bob, of course, has another title. I believe he is the chair of the Whitman-Hanson Regional School District. We're going to let him hang out and join us in chat. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. It's great to be back here. It's always fun to be down here on 95.9 WATD.
Oh, wow. See that? All that training 10 minutes before the show paid off. I can go home. I have cleared my bucket list. I'm kidding. But Bob is going to be here and joining in on the conversation. And we've got a heck of a lineup for you, starting with State Rep Dave DeCoste. He should be joining us after the traffic break with Malcolm Alter. And then Mr. Mike O'Loughlin. He is running for selectman in Rockland. I actually have a little bit of a history other than Mike being a candidate for office. He and I have competed in some softball tournaments. And he's a hell of a first baseman. He won't tell you that, but he's a hell of a first baseman. So we'll talk with Mike and get an idea as to why he's running for office. And we've been doing this the past couple of weeks where we try to bring folks in who are running for office, kind of get an idea as to what they are up to and what they're doing. And then after the break, Bob, we're going to speak with WATD's political analyst, John Creed. And Mr. Creed will kind of give us a little insight. I tapped John to be a part of the conversation. Because John pays attention as to what's going on down in Washington, D.C. with the new administration. And I want to kind of get his take on how Donald Trump is doing a third of the way into his first 100 days. I want to get his take on it. And there are a couple of other races that are developing. I want to get his take on it. Were you going to say something, Bob?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting. I know that the Elizabeth Warren issue is on topic about who could possibly be running against her, and it could be State Rep Jeff Deal. But there's also an interesting take on what's in today's news about the veterans with Elizabeth Warren and the illegal immigrants. So there's going to be a little bit of banter, I'm sure, with that going back and forth.
Yes, indeed. We'll talk to John about that. John, again, guy who has his finger on the pulse of politics. And we tap him from time to time and get his insight onto things. Then we'll speak with Dave Author. Dave Wedge, who is an author, a good friend, author of the Boston Strong book. And he and his one of his writing partners, actually I would say this is his writing partner going on their third book because they just got done with a challenge book. It's a story about Pete Frates. We'll speak with Dave about writing a story about Tom Terrific, number 12. As they're going to be putting together not only a book, but a movie. So we'll talk with Dave about that. And then we're going to speak with Mark Rashto. Mark doubles from time to time, not only as someone who comes in and talks about what's going on at Massasoit Community College, the theater company, but He has sat in the same seat that you do, Bob, but tonight he's going to talk a little bit about a show that is coming up at the Buckley Performing Arts Theater. So we'll look forward to talking to Mark about that.
Sounds like a full list of characters this evening.
And you're the lead character. So
exactly.
It's definitely good that you're here and you can be first one up to be part of the conversation. Is with Dave DeCoste has sat down. He is he's here and he's ready to rock and roll. He's already given me some paperwork here, a couple of house docket numbers. So definitely looking forward to. How are you doing, Dave? All well?
How are you? Thanks for having me. I showed up. How about that? Route 3 was working against me, but we're here, so.
Definitely good to have you here. Dave, of course, the state representative for the 5th Plymouth District.
Just Plymouth, you've got it. Hanover, Norwell, Rockland.
I was going to say that, but you beat me to it. You beat me to it. So how are things with you, sir?
Good. Things are going well. We're picking up. We've got thank you for the raise. I'm giving it all away, but appreciate the raise. That's probably our biggest thing. I wish the rest of our legislation could move so quickly.
So, in case you didn't already know, the WEED is now legal in the Commonwealth, which means using the WEED is no longer considered illicit. So, Brennan's Smoke Shop can sell pipes and vapes legally for the WEED, okay? Brennan's Smoke Shop, the champions of tobacco in Massachusetts. Customers must have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store. Like us on Facebook.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return here to Monday Night Talk. Thank you for keeping that radio dial set to 95.9 WATD. And we began our conversation before finding out what's happening out on the roadways with State Representative Dave DeCoste, who is here hanging out. And one of the first things you mentioned as you sat down, Representative, was about the pay raises.
Pay raises.
What's your thoughts?
Well, as you know, as a matter of fact, you probably were one of the first ones to talk to me about it, I think. I think you were actually the first guy in the media to talk to me about it. When I ran in the primary long ago, in the Republican primary, it was in 2014, that was a little bit of an issue because our literature also always said that, you know, I would take no pay raise, no per diem, no pension. Now, I don't belong to the pension plan. The per diem, they have changed now to expenses, and that kind of gets washed away. And the pay raise came, and you know, I committed to not taking it. So we're a very well-paid group of people. If you compare us to our peers, say, in Vermont or in Connecticut or in Rhode Island, I think the numbers are roughly, you know, we make, the folks in Connecticut, I think, make about 60% of what we do. And the folks in Rhode Island are less than that, less than half, unless the numbers have changed. But the bottom line is we do quite well. I've committed not to take it. It's quite easy for me between the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts and the Boosters and Friendship Home and Cardinal Cushy, we can give it all away.
What's your thoughts on how it happened? Because there are people who question the timing of it. It's you know, it's very early in the legislative session. I know that one of your colleagues actually a couple of years ago actually was kind of sitting and waiting towards the end of a legislative session because there was thought that there might be an attempt to try to push something through when nobody was looking.
Well, you know, a cynic might say that a lot of the leadership who are getting closer to pensions wanted the pay raise to be reflected. And you know the numbers. I don't have them with me. But some of our leaders, if they do decide to retire, will end up with pensions for just serving another couple of terms over and above $30,000 a year. That is an increase of what they would have been getting. So, and to put that in perspective, a person can work their entire lifetime contributing the maximum amount of Social Security. And the last time I checked, which was a few weeks ago, is $27,000. So they, in 3 years, are going to accrue more of a benefit than a person in Social Security would get over a lifetime at the maximum payout. It's pretty substantial.
Bob?
Dave, some of the defendants of the pay raises were stating, they were saying, well, look at New Hampshire where the representatives only make $100 a year and you get what you pay for by, you know, they're stating that this 400 representatives or something to that number in New Hampshire and they were making $100 each and you only get what you pay for. How do you answer that?
Well, I mean, there's two ways to look at that. I look at this not as public service. It's not public enrichment. You know, I'm not – the median income in Norwell is about $141,000. If we're really going to match that, then they'd have to give themselves quite an increase. The idea here is to, you know, – my feeling has always been that you do your best you can while you're a younger person. You present yourself to the electorate, say, here's what I've done. Here's what I accomplished. Here's what, you know, I can add to the equation, and then you run. But it shouldn't be something where you're securing a second pension, where you're racking up per diem for plat times you may or may not go in, looking to get a pay raise over and above. And again, New Hampshire, is everyone in New Hampshire bad? I don't know. My relatives in New Hampshire, they had for the longest time a bank president and a retired superintendent out of Franklin. Two of the three of them, and those were pretty bright guys. Are the legislators in Rhode Island or Connecticut even less capable? Because I don't think so. So the bottom line is, I don't think this is the folks who are motivated for money or by money will go elsewhere. And I think this is something that it's kind of like the military. You know, our general officers will probably get. We'll probably get less money certainly there are public safety people in this county making a lot more money than General Dunford, who's now the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Like the military, public service is not something you should go into to get rich.
I agree.
Let's take a look at a new legislative session. We're just a few weeks in. Mm-hmm. What are you kind of hoping to accomplish this time around?
Well, the governor's got an aggressive package, and we're working on a number of things. I guess, do you want me to talk one over the world and then maybe some specifics? One over the world, basically, again, good government initiatives, tighten up on the MBTA and make it a better running organization. He has got some, he is looking at some improvements there that I think we can, with the management board, they can implement. Specific to the South Shore, I always make sure to remind him that nobody wants a toll, and it's always done in a jocular fashion, but nobody wants a toll road.
Mm.
That idea keeps springing up. Like,
well, we've had that conversation about Route 3.
Right. No one wants a toll road on Route 3, and yeah. Believe it or not, there are folks at the DOT still batting that around, so you want to swat that down.
I mean, you technically look at me with the tolls coming down. Mm-hmm. They kind of technically have already started that process, haven't they? Have they not? I mean, with now it's just a matter of cameras capturing your license plate, mm-hmm. as you're going through the areas that used to pay tolls in that area.
Don't give them any ideas.
I'm not, but I'm just saying that it's, you know, it's one of those things that it's not impossible if they were able to so seamlessly. You know, take down those tolls and be able to still collect the money via FastPass. What's not to say that it's not something that they don't try to. I mean, because there was a conversation a couple of years ago, and I know it's still circulating up at the State House, about doing something like a mileage tax or something, a way to be able to, hey, listen, be lucky they're not trying to find a way to tax you for breathing. I mean, that could be next. Mm-hmm. Just saying.
Just saying.
Just saying.
Well, to move on, the draft cherry sheets came out, and we did okay. We might get in the cherry sheets to the delineate what I look specifically for in the local aid numbers, so the amount of money that we'll get, and all three towns did all right. Now the stock market is surging again, perhaps we'll see even more returns in taxes, and really that is... that is what drives the capital gains on stocks, or what drive a lot of times the state receipts. So hopefully we might do a little bit better and see a little bit more money. Locally, I am working with Senator O'Connor and others, but primarily Senator O'Connor and Jeff Deal, who serve with me in the Housing Committee. We're going to try once again. I know it's a little, you know, a little bit like tilting at the windmills, but we're going to try to do some 40B reforms. We're going to take a closer look this year, maybe at water. Water's become an interesting, and we're working on some regulations for gray water. That's a kind of an in-the-weeds issue. But either through legislation or perhaps regulation, we're going to work to clear up some confusion and make installing gray water systems in household and businesses a little bit easier.
Hmm.
And that's a nonpartisan issue.
And for folks who don't know what gray water is or what the system is, what is it?
Gray water is primarily would be water out of, for instance, washing machines and so forth. And you can recycle it and either use it, you can recycle it back into the system or use it for watering. And a lot of these systems now incorporate rainwater. So it basically all goes to a cistern, and you can save, this region can save millions of gallons of water. And instead of using treated water to mow your, to water the lawn, they can use gray water, which is perfectly fine. We have some, as I said, 40B legislation to mitigate problems in 40B, and then also a tax, an optional tax exemption for senior citizens that will put, again, it's not mandated, but it's local option, and this would allow a system whereby the towns could reconfigure their tax systems to give senior a means-tested property tax break to senior citizens. By the way, already on a local option basis, already working in Sudbury. So this isn't a what if. They're actually making it work in Sudbury. And this year I'm co-sponsoring it or co-presenting it with Representative Gentile out of Sudbury. And so we'll see if we can't push that forward. We've got quite a few sponsors in both parties. So hopefully it's something we take a look at.
So you have hit the ground running.
We've hit the ground running. Yeah, hopefully we'll get it. And then we've got a bunch of smaller bills. One of the committees I'm on is a public service committee, which is a busy committee. It deals with a lot of little bills in addition to the big picture public service stuff. And that, in a way, benefits the folks in my district because there are a lot of, every now and then the pension system, for instance, needs to be tweaked a bit in order to accommodate some folks who the law overlooked, who fell through the cracks, who shouldn't be. And we've already got a couple of bills that we're working along with all three of the senators. Senator Keenan from Rockland, Senator Brady represents Hanover, Senator O'Connor. We've got constituents in all three towns who fall into those categories, and we're trying to make things right.
Governor, not too long ago, released his budget, part of the process.
You're right.
It slowly trickles down to, I think, the House. Is that mm-hmm. next?
Right.
How are things going in regards to the House putting together a version? Folks who don't know the process, mm-hmm. what are we looking at right now as far as the House putting together their version before it rolls on down to the Senate?
Ways and Means, it's in Ways and Means. They'll start it. It's starting. They're looking at it.
Ball's rolling.
The ball is rolling. Again, as the numbers come out, things will evolve or devolve. But again, it's not a perfect process. And you would wish the governor's still going to be forced into some, and Speaker DeLeo and President Rosenberg, they're all going to be forced into a, we can't fund everything nice, everything we'd like to. So there are going to have to be some priorities that are set. And so we'll see how it worked out. I'm hopeful.
Okay. You know? Are you refraining from using that nasty three-letter word? Like we could see.
Well, in terms of tax hikes, no. We won't. I might have another promise in addition to the no pension, no pay. I'm not voting for any tax hikes.
Where do you feel that the rainy day fund, the stabilization fund that the state has, and it tries to sock money away whenever we see, you know, a good month that the revenues are up and stuff like that, unless, you know, there's a supplemental budget that is put together to go, hey, let's spend this, we get extra money. How does the stabilization fund look, and how do you feel that the House is going to look to dip into it if they need to?
Let me answer the last question first. There'll always be the inclination, because you're right, there always is the pressure to spend more.
Right.
So there'll be that pressure there. How the specifics of the budget, I could not comment on that right now. I think that
it's too early in the process, but
that's a question for the governor, maybe Treasurer Goldberg. But as I did allude to, hopefully the capital gains that are generated by this, if the stock market holds up or keeps going the way it's going, we could have a very good year, you know, and then there'll be fewer problems and fewer 9C cuts or no 9C cuts. depending.
How closely are you going to be paying attention to Donald Trump, President Trump's speech tomorrow night before Congress?
I'll listen to it. I mean, I have no, I'm not one who, I'm not particularly worried about the president one way or the other. And if it was Hillary Clinton, it will have an impact down here, but I don't, President Trump and I have an agreement. He doesn't comment on what I do, and I don't comment on what he does, so... the bottom line is I think the one thing you can say for the president now is he's trying to do exactly what he said he'd do, and nobody should be surprised at anything that that he is trying to move forward.
Okay. Any thoughts on where things stand with recreational marijuana law?
Now, there's an interesting there's an interesting twist to this because we were before the Norwell Board of Selectmen a while back. And that question came up, and my answer was that if now Attorney General, it wasn't then, but if Attorney General Sessions decides to implement federal law, at least regarding recreational marijuana, then the problem will go away. Personally, in a perfect world, I'd prefer that they make a national allowance, again, maybe a state option allowance that, you know, alcohol is regulated at the federal level. If we're going to do this, they ought to regulate marijuana at the federal level with maybe a local by state allowance for medical marijuana. And but I am personally not a big fan of any type of flaunting of federal law. And right now, whether it be immigration or marijuana, we're going against the law. And, you know, we're either a nation of law or men. And if we're a nation of laws, then this shouldn't be happening.
The question I'm going to ask you, I'm going to try to make it a common thread throughout the evening, if possible, with all of my guests. Did you watch the Oscars last night?
No.
Oh.
No.
Because I was going to ask you, if you were Warren Beatty and you had that envelope and you looked at it and you go, hey, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. And it's for, you know, lead actress.
Yeah. I was listening to the news this morning on WATD, so I heard all about it. Right. I'm not sure what I would have done. I actually just felt sorry for him as I listened. He's clearly a little bit flustered. So okay. I don't know what I would have done.
Bob, what would you have done?
I think it was pretty interesting the way they came down. I didn't watch it too much either, and I did hear it this morning. It was very difficult at best, and it put Warren Beatty right on the spot, and I thought that he probably did about as good as you could do with it by passing it along. I mean, how do you do when there's a big mistake? It happens, and you move forward. And he said the best that he could.
Yeah, he. I think he rebounded gracefully. Anyway, you could say that.
I was getting a kick out of the award shows like that. You know, they have their messages, and then when there's an incident like that, when it happens, you wonder if it's a surreal moment, if it's actually happening. Because you get Jimmy Kimmel, who is a comedian, a talk show host. Which is not to say that he didn't perpetrate such a stunt. But then, you know, it was funny because I'm somebody who watches things that happen behind the scene. And he saw the guy with the headset kind of walking around in the back. I'm going, something's up. Either they're trying to get all these people off the stage for some reason, or something went wrong. And, you know, my feeling was correct, even though I didn't know so at the moment. I will point out one thing that my fiancé had mentioned, and I haven't heard anybody say it yet. But when they made the announcement, when Faye Dunaway made the announcement, there was, anybody who watched it, they made a comment about, you know, La La Land being, you know, they were, you know, this was their X amount. It's kind of weird that, you know, they're mentioning that this was, you know, that they had broken a record or they had matched a record or something like that. Now, myself, being a technical guy, I think they had something in the 360, and when it was announced, they hit the button, and they had something no matter what they were prepared for if any of those movies had won, whether it was this director's, you know, second nomination for his victory, stuff like that. But it was just funny that she pointed that out. She's correct. So, well, I want to thank you very much for coming in. Anything that we haven't touched upon but you want to touch upon real quick?
Someday we can talk about veterans' preference, because we're moving forward on an interesting bill, bipartisan bill, on that. There's a little bit of a disconnect between pulling out of civil service and retaining veterans' preference, and we're going to take a look at maybe fixing that disconnect.
let's do this next time that we have you scheduled to come in. And I'll talk to, is it Hannah?
Hannah, yes.
Hannah is fantastic. I had a chance to chat with her today.
Yes, she is.
We'll make sure that we...
She's looking after me.
We line everything up. We'll talk with Hannah and have you come in, and we'll make sure, I'll make a little note here that we'll make sure that we save some time for veterans' preference and what's being done in that realm.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You got it. And now if folks want to get in touch with you,
sure.
How can they do that?
If they've got email, the easiest way to get in touch with me is dfdecoast@gmail.com. That's easy to remember. David F. DeCoast. So it's dfdecoast@gmail. My office number is 617-722-2230. And they can get a hold of me there.
Representative, thank you so much
thank
for joining us this evening. And
thank
we
you.
Will You're step welcome. Aside. And when we come back, we can talk Rockland Selectman's race. Mike O'Loughlin is here. More Monday Night Talk in just a moment.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. There was a little bit of a standoff going on there because I had said to Bob during the break, I said, Bob, you're going to bring us back in. And Bob goes, you want me to do that? I'm like, yeah. Part of being the wingman.
There you go.
And he didn't do it.
I know. Well, I wasn't sure, Kevin. You know, most of the time I'm not quite sure whether you're kidding with me or just pushing me along. It's difficult to tell sometimes. But we have an interesting next guest that's come forward this evening.
Well, I don't know if he's come forward. He was invited.
Well, same thing. Come forward, invited. He's a man that...
Appeared.
He appeared. His name's Mike O'Loughlin. He's running for the Rockland Board of Selectmen.
And he's one heck of a softball player, too.
Well, I heard that, but I guess the question has to be asked, seeing as he played with you. What's the skinny with that, Mike? You know.
So, actually, you know, Kevin and I both play on Team Trocas. Captain Dave Trocas from Abington. He is, it's in the Hug Foundation softball tournament, which is run by Alex and Lisa Bazanson.
Yep.
Alex is, I think, chairman of the Board of Selectmen in Abington. And also running for state rep.
Is he chair?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure. But he's definitely been on the board for a little while.
He is, yeah. He is a member of Abington Selectmen. Yeah?
It's a great foundation that helps people with sudden illness. And they hold fundraisers throughout the state. He holds a great softball tournament. I know the first year we did it, it was, 120 degrees. And we played seven games. I don't think I walked for a week after that. But it's a great tournament. And it's fun to be a part of. And Kevin, you know, he's giving me credit as a first baseman. Phenomenal catcher.
Easiest job. It's the easiest position to play, honestly. It goes by the umps right there, throw it back. There's no stealing. Yeah, there's no stealing. But it's fun to participate. And again, you're doing it for a great cause. Yeah. And we get to hang out for an afternoon. And again, it's depending on what the weather's like. It can be a good time. It depends on what colors you're wearing, too.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Definitely depends.
Blue was better than, I think, the purple last year.
Oh, my God, yeah. So, but no, we have you here to talk a little bit about running for office. Kind of give us a little bit of a little background on you, Mike.
So I was born and raised in Rockland, graduate of the class of 1998. I'm a homeowner in Rockland, a lifelong resident. My wife is a lifelong resident of Rockland. She graduated in 2001. We have two kids that go to Rockland Public Schools. You know, I've been chairman of the finance committee for the last 3 years in the town. I had to resign last week because the nomination went through for a selectman. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I saw it as an opportunity to kind of guide the direction of the town over the next few years. It's an important time for us in the town of Rockland. You know, we have view ourselves as a transitional community. A lot of young families moving into the town, and it's an exciting time for Rockland.
Well, that's interesting that you had to. So, do you have to actually remove yourself from the finance committee, or just as the chair?
I had to remove myself completely from the finance committee.
That's a town charter thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's a bylaw that honestly, at the time that I decided to run, I didn't know about. I assumed, and I made the promise to my committee that I'd be there through, you know, April 8th anyway, when the election is, sure. And if I got voted in, then I wouldn't be there for town meeting, but I'd be chairing the committee the entire time. And then as I turned my papers in, it came to my attention that there was a little known bylaw that said, if you're on the finance committee, it's the only committee in town that you can't run for office out of without resigning your position. So,
well, Mike, are you running unopposed, or do you have someone running against you?
And we have a pretty good field, actually. There's four other people running. There's two seats open. The incumbent, Mike Johnson, he is not seeking re-election this time around. He's been there for, you know, nine years. So okay. He's done an excellent job for the town. There is an incumbent that is seeking re-election. Corey Welsh will be running again. We have Deirdre Hall, who is the vice chairman of the Democratic Town Committee. She's running. Bill Cormier, who is a water commissioner in town. And Kevin McGee, who's a business owner in town. So, yeah, there's quite a few candidates running on the ballot this year.
Just make sure you speak right into the microphone.
I'll because
we
closer.
Want folks. The only thing that is missing is a visual. So being able to hear you is going to be
That's
everything.
That's pretty important.
What would you feel are some of the most important issues in town if you are somebody who is elected to one of those two open seats? What are some of the things that you're going to be tackling as a member of the Board of Selectmen?
Well, right now, I think the most important thing for the town is the revitalization of the downtown area. It's something that they've been working on. There is a committee, a revitalization committee. They've been putting together some presentations on a 40-hour developmental plan. And what that should do is it should, hopefully, from North Ave in Rockland to Water Street in Rockland, it should stimulate the growth of the downtown area and add residents to the downtown and add businesses, you know, and make it an area where businesses want to come and where the people want to utilize, you know, to shop and, you know, dine out, restaurants, whatever, downtown. So
we actually, Mike Mullen,
yep.
Rockland Selectman, was in here.
Yep.
I believe he serves on that committee that you're talking about.
He is. He's the chair of it. Yep.
Did a great job. No, I think that the committee, the meeting that they were having might have been postponed. Again, it was a couple of weeks ago and might have been moved.
Yeah, they moved it.
It was rescheduled.
I think they had it February 16th. Unfortunately, I was working that night. I wasn't able to attend. I've gone over everything. I've spoken with Mike offline, and he's caught me up to speed for the most part. So,
being somebody who's had his hand on, you know, in the town's finance committee, how is the town set when it comes to its finances? I mean, we had a state representative, your mm-hmm. state representative, mm-hmm. who
Absolutely.
Is here. Do you kind of wonder where things are going? We got a new administration down in Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. There's no guarantee when it comes to getting local aid. And, you know, overrides aren't something that people want to mm-hmm. vote on every year either, to be able to balance the budget for the town.
So one of the things that I'm most proud of from the time that I served on the finance committee, when I got to the committee, we had $10,000 in a stabilization account, which, comparing it to other towns, is not anything. It wasn't good. But this spring, hopefully at town meeting, we'll be proposing to put some more money into the stabilization, which will bring us up over $1 million in stabilization, which is a place that we've never been as a town. which, to your point, as you said to Representative DeCoste, it's a rainy day fund, and $1 million for Rockland is a really strong position to be in.
Bob, do you have a question?
Mike, running and being the chair of the Finance Committee, you're pretty aware of what goes on with school budgets.
Mm-hmm.
How does Rockland fit? I know Rockland's a single school town, whereas Whitman-Hanson's a regional school district, and some of that management comes from the Board of Selectmen.
Well, we have it pretty set. It's set up really, really well in the sense that we have an understanding between the town and the school. We give the school a 70-30 split. So they get 70% of the budget.
Mm.
We get 30%, no questions asked. They have their 70% to do with it what they need to do, and we have our 30%, and we all work within those constraints. The school actually right now has just been approved by the MSBA for a potential new elementary school in town. So I think the next step would be a feasibility study. So the state of the Rockland school system is in great state right now. It's moving forward.
You great. Look at the old naval base, which is, you know, we saw it kind of seemed like it sputtered for a bit, but we've seen some change in ownership of that property. It's now called Union Point. Give me your thoughts on the development of that property and how it can help and enhance things for the town of Rockland.
Well, right now, the majority of the development is on the Weymouth side of the base. You know, for us in Rockland, I think the biggest focus for us is the development of our downtown area. There's been a lot of questions asked about the gate at the end of Union Street, which I think at this point, as far as opening the gate and connecting it, I think at this point is somewhat of a moot point. I think the real focus for us as a board should be revitalizing the downtown and see what we get out of that. Obviously, any decision on the gate would be way down the road. As far as that's concerned, you know, my opinion, I've lived in the town for years, and you know, there's thoughts out there about the gate being opened, and I don't think right now would be a time to say whether you're for it or against it. Not having all of the information involved in what it would do, there's a neighborhood that's lived as a dead end for over 50 years that would be affected, obviously, by traffic. So I think as far as the gate being opened, it's something that, you know, we address when the time comes and all parties are heard from, you know.
Is Rockland a town that practices with it as part of the Community Preservation Act, where you're able to take percentage of money from real estate tax?
We just approved that at the last town meeting. I don't believe the committee's even been necessarily appointed by the Board of Selectmen yet, but that was just approved at the last town meeting.
What's your thoughts on something like that and being able to take a percentage of tax dollars and be able to designate it to, if you could see some good, healthy projects for the town of Rockland, what would you like to see done with that CPC money?
So there was some conversation. Last year, obviously, we had a field project that was on the ballot. It got voted down.
Yep.
I'd like to see that again at some point, added back at some point. And hopefully at that point, we do have some money from that fund to put towards it. And anytime, you know, we put money in, and anytime the state's willing to match, that's a good thing.
Mm.
You know, so.
There are some very strict parameters following what CPC can do. I know that fields are some of them, different areas are some of them, conservation acts, land,
historical
stuff, acquiring land.
Yeah.
What are some of the bigger issues that are facing Rockland right now? You have five candidates. There's got to be a hot topic. I know opening the gate
is a huge topic
it makes that street that was dead end now a big traffic problem.
Through, absolutely.
So I'm sure that was a hot topic.
So, I mean, I think to that point, like I said, I think the biggest thing we have going on right now is the revitalization of the downtown area. The other thing is obviously the potential for a new school. They'd like to take and build in a new elementary school, which would then set up one of our existing schools to be an early childhood school, which would have our full-day kindergarten, which we already have, and would set up for a full-day preschool program, a free full-day preschool, which we have the free full-day kindergarten, and then we'd consolidate and have one elementary school. So I think on the horizon, you know, right now, those are the two biggest things affecting the town as far as projects coming up.
But Mike, as we talk about the gate, not to be redundant mm-hmm. on it, a lot of people think that by opening the gate, it will revitalize the center of town versus having people going out onto Route 18 mm-hmm. or going out onto the other side of VFW Parkway, which I think in Weymouth it changes yep. names even.
It's, Delahunt, mm-hmm. the Delahunt Parkway.
Right. Yeah, and then that gate automatically brings people directly to the highway. The feel is that I've seen with the people I've spoken with, if you open the gate and let the people that eventually all the houses are built in there, it will mm-hmm. help revitalize downtown.
There's that school of thought, obviously. Again, at this point, what are we offering? You know, let's see what the revitalization downtown does. If that can stimulate the growth downtown, then we may never need to open the gate. And like I said, it could be a moot point. You know, we can find other ways around it. When we get to that point, I think that'll be the conversation that I'm sure a lot of people in town, I'll seek their opinions on and make a decision based on that.
Campaigning via social media? Do you have a website? What's your manner? You
right now
popping out signs on lawns? What are you doing?
The signs on lawns will be coming probably, I think, another week. Okay. I'll put those up this weekend. I do have a event coming up. Everything's been on social media. I have a Facebook page, Elect Michael Laughlin Selectman. That's out there. I think you might have followed it. I sent you an invite. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it. then I do have a event coming up this Saturday night at Players Sports Bar on okay. VFW Drive. Jackie and Melissa do a great job up there. We've got a lot of people that said that they're going, so hopefully it's a good turnout, and that can be the campaign kickoff.
As I try to lure the representative into conversation about the Oscars, did you watch the Oscars?
I did not watch the Oscars last night, probably for the first time in about 25, 30 years. And that I was working last night, so okay. it wasn't for any kind
you must
of
have, protest. You must have seen the video, the
all
rerun.
All over the place. All yeah. over the place, yeah. I was looking for Steve Harvey. I was wondering where he was.
Miss Columbia.
Yeah.
I won!
Yeah. I was wondering where Steve Harvey was. And you're right. I did hear them say they made the announcement. The voiceover came through and they said, win the 11th Oscar or something like that.
It was something, record, something so. Yeah. It was that they had set a record. And it's funny. Yeah. And then, I mean, I feel bad. And people are like all over Warren Beatty. He was the one who read it.
No, Faye Dunaway said it.
Yeah. Faye Dunaway. I mean, she's gotten away unscathed.
Well, I think it was just Warren Beatty. He looked so lost. He looked so lost when everything was going on. I got to tell you,
it was one of those. I mean, I watched the award shows just to kind of see the shenanigans that happen. And with Jimmy Kimmel, and Jimmy Kimmel has that fake war going on with Matt Damon. There was some funny moments, like when Ben Affleck and Damon came out, they actually said, they do the overhead announcement. They go, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck and guest.
Yeah.
It was just like,
give it to him. Yeah,
wouldn't even give it. It was funny, but it's live. What are you gonna do? Yep.
Well, I think Kev, the big question in the room last night was, did they tell Jimmy Kimmel to stay away from the political end of what's going on, other than what he does on the show? Because he touched on it at every moment that he could. But he kind of stayed away from naming anyone specifically. He was a little bit cautious, more cautious than I've ever seen him.
But he did do the Twitter thing. He was like, that. You're like, they put his phone, like, I'm kind of new to this Twitter thing. And then like up on the big screen, they showed him tweeting Donald Trump, saying that this actress had said hi, or are you watching? And just trying to poke the bear a little bit to see if the president would react. It was kind of
definitely that's what was going on.
It was definitely fun.
It was much more subtle than normal, though.
Yeah. So you really didn't miss anything? I mean, it was interesting. I find award shows like that, I find interesting. The only thing is when somebody just kind of goes off on a tear politically because it's like social media these days. When you look at social media, people are just...
Absolutely.
Unraveling left and right.
Yeah,
it
can be very polarizing.
It can. Absolutely. Yeah, but, hey, that's... I guess that's why it was invented. So people could do that. So
that's why it was invented?
Well.
That's it. To connect?
Well, freedom of speech. Okay. To connect. Freedom of speech. To get the word out there. Say things you wouldn't say to someone else's face. Stuff like that.
Sure.
There's a lot of that going on.
A lot of that going on.
Yeah.
Mike, I want to thank you so much
for coming in. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Appreciate having you in. Other than, I got to have you in when it's time for softball.
Beforehand.
Beforehand.
Beforehand, yeah, absolutely.
You and Dave Trocas will all get together.
Yeah, because I don't walk for a week after. It's just...
Nor do I.
Yeah, no, I bet. I mean, you're squatted down the entire time.
Oh, my God, it's crazy. It's crazy, but we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
And we are going to step aside, and when we come back, the second hour of Monday Night Talk, we'll kick it off with John Creed here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back. Second hour of Monday Night Talk. Thank you very much for staying with us, keeping that dial set there. Don't forget, coming up at 8 o'clock, Stan and the Gang, South Shore Live. Check them out. I know the second hour they do music. God knows what they're doing tonight, but check them out. South Shore Live with Stan Blackmer. Joining us on the phone line, Bob, is none other than WATD's very own political analyst. We tap him when last year during the presidential, you know, when they'd have debates and, you know, things were winding down and we picked, you know, for Republicans and the Democrats. And John Creed is our guest. John, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Thank you, Kevin. Glad to join you.
And, of course, Bob Hayes is my unofficial co-host for the evening. He'll be chiming in. He has been... I have debriefed him as to what the conversation will be about, so we're in good hands.
Well, we hope to have a good discussion and see what tomorrow night might bring as the president, in his 40th day, will give his first State of the Union address.
You've read off one of my first questions. What are you expecting when President Trump is before Congress tomorrow night?
Well, what I hope he doesn't do is rehash the campaign and make it about himself. I think he's got a lot to do to unite the country. His approval rating is probably the lowest of any president after the first 30 or 40 days. He's got to stop talking about himself and talk about the country and what he intends to do and try to work with the Congress to get things done.
Judd, you got to understand, we're going to do great things. We're going to do really great things here. Sorry, that was a bad impression. How do you think he has done in the first third of, you know, the 100 days of him being in office? How has he done as a president?
Well, I think he's done a lot of things he'd said he'd do. You know, he kind of undid some of the executive orders of President Obama, but he keeps talking about the campaign, and you know, he got the most votes or something, which he didn't. And he's got to concentrate on a message, and he's got to hope that he can convince the Republicans now who own the Senate and the House and to get things done.
Do you feel that tomorrow night he touches upon the Affordable Care Act and the dismantling of that or the retooling of it? And do we hear that we're going to war? Because reports are saying that he is going to look to spend a lot of money in order to be able to deal with the terrorism issue.
Well, it's interesting because the media are pushing that he's going to increase the defense budget by 10%. But actually, if you look at Obama, when he went ahead with his 2018 budget, the increase over what Obama wanted is only 3%. And Senator McCain and other people who are more military-orientated even wants President Trump to spend about $30 million more than Trump is presenting. So his actual increase is only 3% of what Obama was going to do, and less than, say, the Democrat, the Republican hawks in the Congress want to do.
Bob, would you like to ask John a question?
John, if he's only going to increase the budget by 3%, as you're talking about...
Defense spending.
Defense spending.
That's what I'm talking about, the budget on defense spending by 3%, and Obama was going to increase it by 10%. How do you think that fares out with the rest of the military?
Well, that's a good question, and we'll find out, because there's more leaks in this administration than there is in Swiss cheese, so you're probably going to find out pretty quickly. But on the other hand, President Trump is going to do something Obama didn't do, is offset his increases by deduction in other parts of the budget, and that's something Obama never did.
Hmm. So I guess I have to, it begs to ask you, we've talked a little bit about the budget. Does he have the votes? Does he have people on board to be able to take a look at health care and do something with the current model? Or is it a matter of they just... vote to
I think what you're going to find is that President Trump probably has the votes to change Obamacare, but he doesn't have the specificity of how to do it. I think you're going to hear a lot of generalities tomorrow night. And the specificity is where the rubber hits the road. And I'm not sure about how the rubber's going to hit the road down the road.
Is the clock, is it figuratively ticking if this is going to be one of the things? I mean, we know that he's targeting immigration and what to do as far as the illegals that are in the, that are able to come into the country. We know that, you know, he wants to do something in regards to terrorism. But, you know, when you look here at home, you know, the one thing that people have been saying is there's issues with Obamacare, and it's going to, soon we're going to see it continue to skyrocket, and it, you know, it's going to be beyond the cost of anybody to be able to afford it.
Well, I think there's two things. The government is presently $19.6 trillion in debt. And this is the game that's been played. Don't forget, when President Obama began his term in January 2009, the country was $9.6 trillion in debt. It's now $19.6 trillion in debt. And whether you're talking about Republicans or Democrats or whatever, they want to say yes to what everybody wants and no to what they can afford. And don't forget, in April, we run out of money. And the Congress and the administration are going to have to decide, do they extend the debt?
Right.
Because the country runs out of money sometime in April.
Well, they'll have to decide to raise that debt ceiling, no?
That's the thing, and I'm not sure the Republican Congress will go along, because they've been promised over the years, Kevin, that there's going to be cuts in government, and they kind of went along to extend the debt several times. I think now they're going to say, we want the cuts, then we'll see what will extend the debt.
Okay, Bob.
And that's going to be a major challenge for President Obama, the Speaker, and the Senate leader.
I agree with you, John, about the debt extension is going to be difficult because they did promise to try and lower it or not raise it.
No longer kicking the can down the road.
Right. They're going to stop kicking the can down the road. Mm. But when you come in and you make a decision that you're going to end Obamacare, but you don't come up with a specific plan to replace it, do you think that's reckless or do you think that has some sort of a merit in ending some of the debt?
Well, I think it's political naiveness, really, because as much as the Republicans agree on getting rid of the affordable care called Obamacare, mm-hmm. but they don't have a plan as to how to do it, because the more conservative, the Tea Party part of the Republican Party, the Tea Party part wants government out of continued service without being able to pay for it, and the moderates know that things like keeping your children on until 26 and keeping those 20 million people on, they'll go along with it. So the Republican Party as a party have to become united as to how they're going to do it, and that's going to be the challenge over the next 2 months.
And I think that was what I was trying to get at, is we know that there's a small window. There's a two-year window that Donald Trump has. He's got the majority in the House and the Senate, in Congress and in the Senate. How much can he conceivably get? Can he get done in a two-year window, you know, knowing that?
Well, my opinion, he's got two allies, and he should depend on them. The Speaker of the House, yep. Ryan, and the Senate leader. Those people know how the game is played,
right.
And they know how to get it done. He's got to depend. For Trump, it's all about Trump, and that's his problem. Ugh. And he's got to understand that, you know, and he found out in the courts that he got shot down by the Ninth District Court. He got shot down by that, and he really didn't know how to handle it. And so that's something you have to, he has to begin to become a player of the team, not just think because he's where he is, he's got to get what he wants.
Right, right. What's your thought on the ongoing war that he has with the media, with the press, the Fourth Estate?
Well, I think that's Trump. I mean, that's not going to change. To call them the enemy of the people is kind of stupid. But you know, the media hasn't been too friendly to him either. I mean, let's face it, on election night, Kevin, we couldn't believe that Trump was going to win. I mean, I myself thought that Hillary would get over 300-plus electoral votes, but I also thought early in the night she would win Florida and North Carolina. And if you recall, I said in the air, when she didn't win those quickly, I said, oh, this might be a little closer than I thought,
right.
Never thinking that Trump was going to win Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania.
Right. Well, you know, we look at races, we talk about races, looking here locally, that there's been the hot rumor right now is that a South Shore representative, State Representative Jeff Diehl, may be considering a run against U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, somebody who is, she in her own right has become a political powerhouse. Other folks may diminish what her ability is, but I think she's grown in stature since she's been elected. What kind of a race are we seeing here if this does happen to materialize?
Well, first of all, Senator Warren is very well received in Massachusetts.
Right.
I would say, just going back to last Saturday, the Democrats went more to the left. I don't think they can win by going to the left nationwide. Remember this. Right now, there are 194 Democrats in Congress. 66 of the 194 come from Massachusetts, New York, and California. The Democrats are a coastal party, and that's not a national party.
Right.
In Massachusetts, she could win. The only I know Jeff, I would say if he's going to do that race, number one, he needs a tremendous amount of money, And number two, I hope somebody's promising something, because it would be even a longer shot that's when Scott Brown beat Coakley for somebody, a Democrat, to beat Warren.
Is it fair to say that the National Republicans might pour money into a race like that?
Well, they might put money into it, Kevin, to keep Warren from going around to campaign for other Democrats.
Right.
Don't forget, there are 20 in the Senate next year. There are 23 Democratic seats up and 10 Republican seats. Of the 23 Democratic seats, 10 of them, Trump carried those states, and 6 of those 10, Trump won by double figures.
Okay.
So they, by having somebody in the Republicans putting nationally into a race to make Warren stay in Massachusetts, might help them long, you know, throughout the country, and not necessarily to pull an upset here.
John, what do you think if Warren does run against Deal and Deal comes out on top and bumps
runs against Warren?
Yeah. The other way around.
Yeah, either way. If Deal runs against Warren
right now, go ahead.
And wins it and pulls it off, how do you think that sets the Democrats up?
If Warren loses, the Democratic Party means that in the Senate next year, they may not have enough seats to worry about. And it could really set the Democrats back to after Senator McGovern lost in 1972 to Nixon. I mean, it would be a major a defeat, not only in Massachusetts, but if the people are thinking to knock off a Warren, then a lot of Democratic seats, Senate and House throughout the country, would be in deep, deep trouble.
Again, we're speaking with John Creed. He is our political analyst here at 95.9 WATD. Coming up in a few moments, we will be speaking with Dave Wedge, author of the Boston Strong book, and has many, many other projects on his plate, not only as an author, but also as somebody who's a co-owner of a production company. I want to kind of shift gears from the Senate, the potential senatorial race to a gubernatorial race. We know that it was not too long ago that Jay Gonzalez, the financial guy for former Governor Deval Patrick, has launched a campaign. He is going to run for governor. You and I chatted, and you have confirmed that you're hearing that Newton Mayor Seti Warren may also be jumping into this race. What kind of a benefit is there to getting an early start 2 years out from a race like that?
Well, it's because you can collect money over 2 years.
Right.
In other words, people can only donate so much in a given year, so this would give people a chance to donate in 2017 and then 2018. I would think the Democrats might push the Attorney General to get in that race. That would be interesting. I think a thing that's hurting Baker, you know, first of all, he did not support the Republican candidate for president who became president.
Mm.
Massachusetts got Warren, who's not really an ally of the president. So I think the governor has a problem, because he has a problem with conservative Democrats who elected him. And he couldn't win without conservative Democrats. And he's got to play it very carefully with the Trump Republicans. So he's got some tight rope dealings with, too. Ordinarily, you'd say he's in a shoe-in. But if he continues to go away from conservative Democrats on issues like transgender and abortion and same-sex marriage, then if those type of Democrats won't vote, those type of former conservative Democrats won't vote for a Democrat, but they won't vote for him either.
Definitely,
you got to worry about the people who stay home.
Right, and I mean, have you seen any recent polls as to where the governor stands, his popularity? Because it was pretty high not too long ago. He was riding a wave.
He lost 12 points on the election because of his support of charter schools.
Yeah, that went down.
That went down much bigger, Kevin, than I thought. I thought the anti, if you will, charter school people would win. I didn't think they'd win by 26 percentage points.
Yeah, that's I didn't expect that either. And it was interesting that he threw his weight behind that.
He certainly did. He put his name on the line, went on television. And that's fine. But he lost significant percentages of people. And, now I know he's down in Washington for the governor's concert. Mm. But then you had that place in western Massachusetts that had the tornado. So the lieutenant governor had to go out and see those people. And, you know, that type of stuff hurts you, too, even though he doesn't know there's a tornado coming.
Right. I definitely... You scratch your head. And, again, I know it's still 2 years out, but I think if Jay or Seti are going to try to get name or recognition, starting now is the best way to go. And, I mean, what areas would they want to concentrate on to do their campaign and get word out about running for governor?
Make Baker seem to be President Trump. They're going to tie Baker up with Trump as much as they possibly can. I mean, they're going to make Baker Trump's twin, even though he's not even close to that, but that's what they're going to do, because this state's going to go against Trump regardless of what happens.
I will say that on this program, Governor Baker did say that he was in the Chris Christie camp, that he was backing him, and it was a day later that Chris Christie announced that he was suspending his campaign.
Well, and then he was a governor supporting a governor. But the point is, he's got to be careful, because if he separates himself too much from Trump, he's going to hurt himself with the Republican base.
Right.
He's got a tougher rope to be on than you think, even though the Democrats right now don't have a heavy hitter running against him.
Right. One of the common threads that we've had during our conversation this evening was about last night's big event in Hollywood, the Oscars. Did you have a chance to watch, John?
Absolutely, positively, no. I think, I know, I don't go to movies.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about movies. If I was a sponsor, I don't care who the president is, accept the award, thank everybody. Keep politics out of it, because it's not what the people want to know, who's going to be this. And, you know, I'm surprised. They're lucky Trump didn't go after them today for the mess up they had at the end.
Well, it was interesting, as I've described a couple of different times, seeing, guys with headsets running on stage and, it was almost as if you knew it was coming, that somebody made a mistake, and come to find out that there were two envelopes that had Emma Stone's name on it for Best Female, winning an Oscar, and it so happened that the second one got into the hands of Warren Beatty. It's definitely interesting. Probably a final thing that I want to touch upon while I have you still have you on, knowing that you're a guy who spent some time in the Boston Celtics organization. How much are you paying attention to the team these days?
Oh, I watch them. I think Isaiah Thomas is very exciting. Mm. I think not giving up the Brooklyn draft choice, because the Celtics will get possibly the number one pick and no worse than the number four. My only disappointment is they have to do something. Isaiah's been terrific, but in the last five games, he's only shooting at 30%. They got to take care of him.
Yeah.
And also, they give up too many offensive rebounds. And they got to get another rebounder, because when you give up offensive rebounds, you give the opponents more shots.
Yeah, you need that big body, definitely.
And but that number one draft choice is going to be good if they decide to use it, or even better if they try to trade it.
All right. John, as always, we appreciate not only your insight when it comes to politics, but also everything green, the Boston Celtics.
Well, can I just make one last statement?
Please do.
I'll tell you, if I was Trump, I would follow the advice, and I believe it was President Jefferson, who just handed in the State of the Union address in writing and never showed up to give it.
Right. That could be a good idea.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us, and we'll definitely have you back on soon.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Bob, nice to talk to you.
Take care, John. Right, thank you.
There he is, John Creed, our political analyst here at 95.9 WATD. Now, before I get started here, I think we want to give a proper introduction. Larry, if you will, could you cue the music? All right, joining us here on the Monday Night Talk, none other than Dave Wedge. We used to do a polls and politics segment back in the day when he was writing for the Boston Scribe, for the Boston Herald, and now he has, he's growing like nobody's business in the area of being an author. I was a screenwriter, part of a production company. Dave, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
How are you, Kevin? I like the intro, the maiden. I like Can I Play with Madness a little better, but I'll settle for that.
That'll be the next time, I promise.
All right. That was Mayor Hedlund's selection, so.
Okay. I'll have to keep that in mind because I love Iron Maiden myself. And aren't they coming to the? They're coming to the area, aren't they?
Absolutely, I got my tickets, ninth row, all set, ready to go.
Dude,
July 19th, my friend.
You got to take me to one of these shows.
Circled on the calendar. Grab yourself a couple tickets. We'll hang out. We'll cook some burgers down there at what will always be Great Woods to me.
Yeah.
Now the Xfinity Center, but. Yeah. Great opening band, too, a band called Ghost. I don't know if you follow Ghost at all.
I do know. I love Ghost.
They're great. They're great. That's going to be a pretty legendary metal show this summer. It's going to be really good.
I will have to talk. We'll definitely have to talk. Well, we got you on to kind of talk a little bit about your latest project. Now, I know that, I've teased you as the author of the Boston Strong book, but you and Casey Sherman just got done with The Challenge, the Pete Frady story. That's the second book that you and he have worked on. You want to give us a little bit of an update on that, on completing that?
Yeah, sure. So, it's been quite a couple of years, obviously. Boston Strong came out in 2015, and, it was adapted into Patriots Day, and, we were very busy with that. But in the interim, we were approached by the Frady's family, and Pete Frady's is obviously the Boston College baseball player who got ALS and was the guy that really launched the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Yep.
And turned that into the viral sensation that it was. And Casey and I wrote that book, and we actually just finished it on Super Bowl Sunday. We filed the final edits for that book. It took us about a year, maybe about 14 months to write. Worked very closely with the Frady's family, great people, incredible story, incredible experience. And, I was really ready to take a break, Kevin. I was like, okay, two books in 3 years, I need a little bit of a break. I do have a day job that I do as well.
Yep.
Because, I have two children and all that. And so I was ready for a little break. And, lo and behold, the Super Bowl happens, and Casey and I had kind of been kicking around doing an NFL book back in when the Deflategate ruling came down back last summer. And, we put on the back burner, and then the Super Bowl happened, and it kind of gave us that storybook ending that we needed. And, the screenwriters that we worked with on The Finest Hours and Patriots Day, Casey's book, The Finest Hours, and they also wrote The Fighter. They got in touch with us. They're our pals now. And they said, guys, listen, huge appetite for Tom Brady redemption movie, and we're going to do it, and we want you guys to do it with us. You're our Boston guys, and we want you to do the book. So lo and behold, here we are. We're writing this book, and it's been incredible. It's moving very fast.
Just so you know, if you hear another voice, it's my unofficial co-host for the evening. Bob Hayes is joining me. He, of course...
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Good, Dave. How are you?
I'm great.
So, now, what are you going to do in regards to this? Does this mean you get to tap into Giselle and Tom and the Kraft family? I mean, is that in the works right now?
Yeah, all these things are in the works. You know, everything's on the table. We've had some preliminary conversations with the team, and you know, they at least haven't told us to pound sand. So, you know, the door's open. You know, whether or not. You know, look, I mean, a story like this, you know, they're not going to officially sanction it. It's not going to be the New England Patriots or the Tom Brady official authorized, you know, version of what happened. But, I mean, you know, it's not unlike Patriots Day in Boston Strong, where Casey and I said, look, we're doing this book and we want to get it right. So we'd like to get your version of what happened. And we did that with many people from, you know, Governor Patrick to Mayor Menino to... Yep. Many of the families, the survivors, the firefighters, the police, the FBI, and so on and so forth. And we'll do the same with this. You know, we're journalists, and we're going to, you know, follow the story where it takes us, and we're going to, you know, we're going to try to talk to the NFL and all the players there. We're going to try to talk to the NFLPA, the Players Association, Tom Brady and his team, and the, you know, certainly the Patriots and players and ex and current. And, you know, we're going to check all the boxes and make sure that we really, you know, do our due diligence and tell this story the right way and tell it accurately. And that's what we've done with, you know, all the stories we've told. You know, Casey's done it. This is going to be Casey's 10th book, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, The Finest Hours is just a great piece of journalism and storytelling. And you know, we think, you know, Boston Strong is as well. It tells the story of what happened on April 15th, 2013 as good as anything else out there, in our opinion. And certainly we think the same of the Frady story. I mean, that one's a little different because that's like it's the authorized story. You know, the family worked with us intimately on that. So that's a little bit different. But this one, you know, we think this is going to be the definitive story of what happened with Deflategate and Tom Brady's redemption in Super Bowl 51 that we just all witnessed. And, you know, we couldn't be more excited about it.
Hey, Bob.
The big piece, I think, of this talk, when you talked about speaking possibly with the NFL, I think the big piece is, do you think you will get to interview Roger Goodell and get his side of the story? Because as you know, in New England, that's a big, big piece of this, and there's a lot of, whether it was the clown shirt on the way off of the plane or any of the above, he's not well-liked. But then when you travel to other parts of the country, they seem to take a different view of the Patriots. Do you think that he'll come forward and be part of this book?
I would be surprised if he wanted to be a part of this book, you know, but... Certainly, we're gonna make every attempt to get the league side of it, including interviewing Roger Goodell. You know, we're gonna put that request in, and you know he can do it or not. I mean, it's not gonna change what we're gonna do. You know, we're gonna investigate what happened and the fallout and what happened in Super Bowl 51, and we're gonna report on all of it. And you know, we certainly want the league's the league to participate, but you know, that's their decision. You know. It's not going to, you know, our book is not predicated on whether or not the NFL sanctions it or wants to be a part of it. You know, look at Concussion. I mean, certainly the NFL did not want that movie made. They did not want that story told. And yet it was told, and it was a very important story to tell. I mean, it tells a very relevant aspect of NFL life, you know, and that is players who are, you know, suffer severe head trauma. And whether or not they got the support they needed, or whether or not they were even taken care of, you know, in their careers, and certainly that was a, you know, that movie. I don't know if you've seen it, Kevin, but it's a very unflattering portrait of the NFL, and the NFL did not want that made, but it was still made, and you know, we're going to take a similar approach here, where you know we're making this, you know, we're writing this book, we're making this movie, you know, would love to have the NFL. You know, weigh in and tell us their side of the story, but if they don't, it's still getting made.
So is this strictly about Deflategate and how the NFL, you know, made the Patriots and Tom Brady the villain in all this? Or are you actually looking at the body of work that Tom Brady has put forth since being drafted 199th overall?
Well, you know, the story's still taking shape, but, you know, we envision this as, you know, basically Deflategate through Super Bowl 51, much in the way that, you know, Ali was the story of Muhammad Ali's struggles during Rumble in the Jungle.
Sure.
And that snapshot of his career. We see it in a similar light where, you know, this isn't, you know, Tom Brady's memoir or the definitive story of Tom Brady's career. There'll be aspects of that, and we'll certainly incorporate elements of his incredible trajectory to being the greatest of all time, you know, from being, you know, the sixth round pick and, yep. you know, the guy that was a backup and, you know, splitting time with Drew Henson at Michigan and then, you know, the knee injury and, you know, his mom being sick and losing Rob Gronkowski, like all that stuff is all part of the narrative. But, you know, this isn't, you know, we're not purporting this to be, you know, Tom Brady's official authorized story. A lot of people are confusing it with that, but, you know, Tom Brady has a book in himself, and I hope he writes it someday because it'll probably be a really incredible read. But, you know, Casey and I are journalists, and we're going to do our due diligence to tell this story completely.
Well, I can't wait. You guys are great writers. You put your heart and soul into it. You have a proven track record, both of you together as a team.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. It's going to be cool. You know, this one kind of caught me by surprise. Like I said, I was planning on taking a little time off from books. You know, hey, everything, you know, timing is everything in this business and every business. And, you know, lifelong season ticket holder for the Patriots and, you know, been inhaling everything about this team for the last, you know, 40 years of my life. So it's, you know, I'm excited to tell this story. It's going to be amazing. It's a great American sports story is really what it is.
Amen.
More than anything.
Dave, we just got a couple more minutes with you, but I got to, you know, I cannot let you escape without talking hockey. And you know where I'm going to go with
the Canadians questions or Bruins?
I think
the Canadians are atop the East, in case you haven't noticed. They are.
By what, a couple of crumbs? By a couple of points?
All right, hey, they're in first place.
Yeah, you're right.
Standing spell.
What do you... Yeah. See, that's what I love about you. We had that little rival, you know, Dave being a Habs fan, and, you know, and that, you
painful.
Know... Hey, good for the Habs for see. I didn't want to see Claude getting fired, Claude Julien, but they were smart snapping him up.
I mean, I called that, by the way.
I know you did. I know you did.
Yeah, I told everyone. I said the Habs are going to grab him. I mean, he's a great coach. You know, he just wasn't the right coach for the system that the Bruins have. And you know, the Bruins they look great right now. They're playing great. You know,
right now
they continue. It'll be very interesting to see if they end up playing the Habs in the playoffs and. You know, Claude knows all their, you know, all their vulnerabilities,
yep.
but they also know Claude's vulnerabilities. So it would be a great matchup to watch. It'd be a great chess match.
Well, the style of hockey that they're playing under Cassidy, it's different. Your defensemen a little bit more active on the offensive side of the ice, but there's going to be a few times that they're going to get caught. That the defensemen are going to get caught flat-footed. That was one thing that Claude didn't like was he wanted to make sure that, you know, it was more of a dump and chase type of a system, but at least you had layers, you know, if you're trying to get back at, you know, Tuukka Rask, you had to get through a couple of layers of Bruins in order to do it. That's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, no, like I said, I think it'll be a great chess match. You know, they certainly know each other anyway. You know, they're very familiar with each other's personnel, but now when you have Claude over there calling the shots, I mean, he knows a lot of the Bruins' tendencies and vice versa.
Sure.
So I'm not convinced they'll play each other, though.
No.
I think one of them might get knocked out before then. Probably the Bruins.
The Bruins. I don't even think the Bruins are going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good shot of that. But if they do, I mean, actually, the way it lines up now, they would play the Canadiens in the first round. So...
But the problem is right now that there are other teams that have games in hand, and they could easily. I mean, and Toronto. Look at Toronto, man. They got some young talent, and you got to watch for them.
Yeah, I think the Bruins will make the playoffs. I do. I think they'll end up making it. They're on quite a run right now, so I think they'll sneak in. And who knows? Could be 1-8 first round. Series would be awesome, but a lot of things have to fall into place then, but certainly a great storyline for the NHL.
Amen. Definitely amen. Well, sir, we want to thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you guys. Kevin, appreciate the support as always, and you know, the Frady's book will be out in October, and, you know, we'll talk again before that.
Yeah, and folks who also, we didn't get a chance to touch upon it, but if you haven't had a chance to read it, Where Boston, Dave's Isaiah Thomas piece, too.
Yeah, I did a great sit-down with Isaiah Thomas.
Awesome.
Which ended up being very timely because he's, you know, he's another guy who's gone on a pretty historic run himself.
Yep.
In the last month or two, and great guy. What a nice guy, Kevin. Really, like, really nice guy. You should actually try and get him on the show. The Celtics are very accommodating. They did have him call in for sure. I mean, he's a very humble dude and really good at what he does. So
I'd always have time for him. That's for sure. Definitely.
All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Dave, keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you soon.
Good job, Dave.
Thanks. Have a good night.
You got it. There he is. Dave Wedge, author of a number of different things, not only the Boston Strong book, but the Pete Frady's book, and soon the Tom Brady book. We're going to step aside. More Monday Night Talk in just a moment.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Daddy, Daddy, I used that tea kettle to melt the ice off your windshield. Now there's beautiful and pretty crisscrosses and sparkly spiderwebs all over the windshield.
What?
Can we do Mom's too? Can we?
Oh. Windshield broken? My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen. Say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here to Monday Night Talk, heard only on 95.9 WATD, and you have arrived at the final segment of the evening. And just a reminder, if you have missed a portion of any of our segments this evening, we do put them up on the website. They are available as a podcast, the complete show. We no longer kind of break it up. It's the whole show. We even give love to our sponsors, where when we do a little bit of a segue from one segment to the other, you know, people who financially give us a little bit of love, and we give them a little love back on the podcast. So if you hear from Tiny and Sons Glass or McGuigan's Pub or Signature Healthcare, well, there's a reason for it, because they're kind enough to sponsor our program. So we complete our evening talking a little theater, and gentleman who is from time to time my unofficial co-host, wingman per se, on this program, is primarily a guest this evening. He's here to talk a little bit about something we talked about last week. And we gave him a chance just to kind of tease it at the beginning and the closing of last week's Monday Night Talk. We have Mr. Mark Rocheteau, who is here. He is the producer for Massasoit's upcoming show, Massasoit Theater Company's upcoming show, Raisin in the Sun. Four shows. First show, of course, March 9th, 10th, and 11th. And I believe on the 11th, there will be a matinee show. So we'll have a matinee and an evening show. Mr. Rocheteau,
Hello, sir.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk as just a guest.
Always happy to be back, sir. Thank you for having me.
Is it, when you're back as a guest, it's not as fun as being able to just kind of sit in and kind of ask questions on different topics.
Dude. Yeah, no, I mean, the whole co-hosting thing, which I love and I thank you for allowing me to do on occasion, is great, and you get this full immersion into the Monday Night Talk scene. However, when you come in and a guest, it's kind of like, you know, a quick shot of cold water. You just got to jump in and make it happen. So you're in the hot seat all the way.
All the way. I want to give you an opportunity not only to promote this upcoming show, but I also want to give you a little bit of an opportunity to kind of give a behind-the-scenes look as to, not that this is something that every theater company goes through the process, but just you are one of the local theater companies that we have in the area. Just want to get an idea of what the process is like
mm-hmm.
when you're deciding a show, what it's like to, you know, I'm sure that it's almost like, we'll pick a sport, like, you know, football. You know, there's an off season. You know, you sure. have, you know, once the season is over, we look at the draft, we look at free agents. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's, you know, there's the trainings, mm-hmm. you know, OTAs, and then we got training camp, and then mm-hmm. you know, you whittle down the number of players from 90 to, sure.
Yep.
those who are on the bubble too. Then you're like, okay. It's, you know, preseason, and then it's prime time. What is it like for you at the being a producer?
Sure, that's actually an appropriate analogy when you consider sports compared to theater. I mean, it kind of operates in the same perspective in so much as the fact that you have a timetable for which you need to prepare and get yourself ready for the show like you do for the game. And also in sports compared to when you look at the community level to the professional level, same thing with theater. We look at it from the community level to the professional level. Things are basically the same, but the timetable changes because of the fact that when you go into a more professional setting, the rehearsal process is sometimes shorter. So that way you're more succinct with people's time and the amount of time that people have to put into the show. And then the other side of it, like with professional sports to community sports, theater varies obviously by the money that's put behind it. So it's money and time, just like everything else, is the basic overall factor that decides your construct of how you go about doing and producing your shows. Massasoit, we're very fortunate in the fact that the Massasoit Community College sponsors and maintains a hybrid model of a community theater where we have community players who come in and audition, and we're also in the process of growing a student-based group or ensemble that can do shows that are specifically fully cast with just students. And that ability for a community college, from my experience, waxes and wanes, really depending upon how many students you have in within that particular cycle that can donate the time to doing the theater. And I say donate the time to doing the theater because in community theater, the other part of it is that your actors don't get paid. So when actors come to you...
There's no scale. You're not part of a union.
No, not at all. And that's actually one of the determining factors as to the level of theater which you're doing, because once you start paying the actors and you're looking at... You're getting to what we consider to be regional theater and or equity theater. But on the community theater level, we just operate on a volunteer basis. So when actors come to our door, they're coming to donate their time. Now, usually with a community theater rehearsal process, standardly is 9 weeks. Sometimes in certain situations we can do a 6 or 5 week rehearsal process, which is accelerated, but those are special instances that depending upon who you have directing and who you have in the show. But for the most part, you're talking 9 weeks, and usually you have 3 rehearsals a week for 3 hours a week. So you're talking a good 75 hours at least of time that the community theater actor volunteers to the piece. So, and one of the reasons why I've always said that Massasoit's greatest volunteer is the volunteer corps is the actors that come to the Massasoit Theater Company. Because if you figure that I'm coming in and doing 75 hours, but you have a cast of 30 people, that's a huge amount of volunteerism that's walking through your door and laying out their talents for basically for the promotion of the art in the end.
It's almost funny, and depending on where it applies, it's almost like local government, because a lot of your towns, whether it's a selectman, school committee person, they are not paid.
Sure.
They do not receive a stipend.
Right.
I mean, in other communities, let's say like a city of Brockton, mm-hmm. Your city council is, they're part-time, even though they will tell you that they're on call 24 hours a day. They get a stipend, and they get access, I think, to health care. But it's very interesting that it was the first thing that popped into my head when you were talking about the time that's donated, community theater. And they don't get paid. And, you know, they earned by the time that they invest in learning, you know, not only depending on what type of a show it is, mm-hmm. whether it's a musical or a straight show, you know, where they have to learn, you know, dance routines and learn, you know, learn music if they're going to be singing a song, and they're investing in it. And that's something, the more time, the more reps they get in, mm-hmm. is the higher that they can climb. It's almost like, again, like a politician. Locally, where, you know, they may start as someone on the finance committee, get to the school committee, eventually run for selectman,
right,
select person, and go from there. So I just wanted to kind of put it into perspective. What went behind choosing this upcoming show, Raisin in the Sun?
Sure. So Raisin in the Sun, as we know, is written by the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Lorraine Hainsbury, and it is it drives home a message that we feel is very very much appropriate today. And at the time, ironically, at the time when we picked the play, it was before the election. And
right, because that's when auditions go out. It's ahead of time, yeah.
Well, yeah, and you generally try to. I mean, for us, our season kind of starts in September, and in a perfect world, you'd have your season picked by July 1. Although sometimes, because we are under the state umbrella, we don't see our budget until mid-fall. You know how the politics work on that.
Absolutely, yep.
So sometimes the choosing of our plays is not as timely as we like. However, we did choose Raisin the Sun. We knew that we wanted to do that way back in the end of the summer, beginning of the fall. And I actually remember making the comment, in so much as the fact that, you know, depending upon who wins the election, the subject matter and the themes behind, or the main theme behind Raisin the Sun, could be a more charged issue and something more immediate. And it just so happened to turn out that the president that we have now is, for good, bad, or indifferent, is causing some friction in regards to some certain issues, and some of that applies directly to Raisin the Sun. So I think Raisin the Sun is really poignant right now, because some of the issues that they are dealing with in Raisin the Sun in regards to racism and moving into my neighborhood and not moving into my neighborhood is very much akin and similar to what we're dealing with on a large, more global scale in regards to, you know, not those immigrants in my neighborhood, you know. I feel as though the timing of it was pretty perfect.
Talk to me about some of the folks who are involved with the show. Who's sure. your director? Mm-hmm. And who are some of the key actors who will be on stage?
Sure. So, one of the things about Raisin the Sun is, obviously, it's a all African American cast except for the one role played by Mr. Linder, Carl Linder. But for the most part, it's a ensemble of African American actors. And being on the South Shore in the community theater, one of the inhibitors of doing this show is seeing if you can get a full ensemble of African-American actors to come in the door. And fortunately, we got that not only to come into our door, but we got that through our student base at Massasoit Community College, which is awesome for us.
Definitely
so fantastic. We have a full complement of Massasoit students perpetuating the cast for the show. Our director, a very special person who is dear to us at Massasoit Theater Company and Massasoit Fine Arts, is Professor Kryn Mason, who is a new hire for us, who is a full-time theater ed professor And she took on the role of directing this along with her additional duty, along with her standard duties of teaching. She's also directing this piece. And she is one who obviously loves the piece in and of itself, but she also loves our students. She loves directing. And so when you put
she's got a lot of passion.
Yeah, yeah. So we've
had her in on this program before.
Right. And when you put that trifecta together of her natural passion for directing, of her love for this piece, and mm-hmm. of her nurturing spirit towards our students, then you have a lock, as far as I'm concerned, on as the director for the piece. And she is pouring everything she has into this, as are our student actors, who are interesting to watch, because some of them, there's a couple actually who have not acted before, and they're finding some natural talents that they've had, which is one of the beauties I feel about community theater. And I think you actually experienced it maybe when you were a student once, is that when you get up on the stage, you find talents within yourself that you didn't realize you had. Mm. And Corinne is a great director and person to do that, to bring that out of somebody. Mm. And hence why she's why she's such a great fit for not only directing this piece, but also as our new full-time theater ed professor.
Definitely fantastic. Now, there's a special component to this show. I think you and I have talked about it. I think we teased it during our previous show, mm-hmm. in regards to where folks who are attending this show, and again, it's March 9th and 10th, 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm. And 11th at 8 p.m.
11th at 8 p.m. Well, yeah. I was going to get to the 11th, say that.
Sure.
Of course, you have the matinee at 3.
Yeah.
And then you have at 8 p.m. The evening program
sure.
on that. But when are you going to be doing something where there's kind of a talk back
sure.
with the audience? Because I think that's a fantastic forum mm-hmm. for folks who want to participate and talk about the things that are happening in mm-hmm. our world these days, and be right. able to interact mm-hmm. and talk with people who are acting out some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So on the Saturday performance on March 11th at 3 p.m., and the matinee at 3 p.m. and the 8 o'clock show, after those two particular pieces, there'll be a talk back that will go for maybe about 30 minutes or so with the actors and maybe even some of the production staff for the show with the audience. And the talk back is a great concept and facilitator that's been used from community theater right up to Broadway, where you get a chance to sit and have a conversation about the show itself, so we can ask direct questions about what this character was thinking in this situation and that situation, or you can go to the production side of it and talk to us about, ask us some questions about how we did that theater magic, as we call it, or you're right, and we can take it out to the social issues that the piece actually addresses. This is a great format for the community to come in and have a conversation. And actually, one of the things that we're trying to kick the tires with and do a little test with is the fact that we have a school time performance on Monday, March 13th, which is closed to a particular invited school, which is Pliff Academy. And they are reading similar themed pieces. They're not reading Raising Sun, but they're studying A Dream Deferred, which is the piece that the poem from Langston Hughes that inspired Lorraine Hansberry for this. And we also invited in Brockton Police and Massasoit Police to read the pieces also, and come in with us on the school time performance and have the conversation. And again, we're actually calling it community conversations, where in the talk back after the piece, so we can discuss social issues and just have a regular conversation about what it is that needs to be addressed.
It is Mr. Mark Rocheteau, a producer for this upcoming Massasoit Theater Company show, Raisin in the Sun. You can reach out to the box office, 508-427-1234. I believe that they can also find it on the website, which is
massasoit.edu/boxoffice.
It's getting shorter, didn't they? They did shorten it,
A little bit,
it used to be longer.
We took the mass out. .edu.
Very, very good.
Getting closer.
Okay. And tickets are still available but they're going fast.
Tickets are available. They are picking up, we have really reasonably priced tickets, and we have a group rate of bringing 10 folks or more. So please check out the website and order tickets. And again, I think that this is a really poignant piece. It's a really well-timed piece, and it's really great theater. I'm just raising in the sun.
And anything, if you've never had an opportunity to go see local theater, maybe you're somebody who you spend all that money going up into Boston. It's not saying that it's not well spent, but you know what? The tickets are pricey. Oh my God, you have to pay to park. No. You don't have to worry about that with this. What are ticket rates? Aren't they like
our tickets are $16 for general tickets and $14 for seniors and students. We have reserved seating. You're right. We have ample parking, free well lit parking, and very accessible from all points on the compass. So yeah, come on down.
Again, this is going to be at the Buckley Performing Arts Theater. This is on Massasoit's Brockton campus, right off of Route 27, 508-427-1234. And I believe he said it's massasoit.edu/box office. That is your way. And I believe not only cash, but you do credit cards too?
Oh, of course. Oh, definitely.
All right. And so we thank you very much for joining us.
The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.